Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab.
We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
For young incoming guys to understand, you can be a big leaguer coming into Delaware just as easy as you can going to Power 5 school. It's possible. You can get there. So if that's your dream, that's your end goal, you can make it. So we've proven that out. We're going to have more future big leaguers here in the near future.
And our guest this week is Jim Sherman. He is the head baseball coach at the University of Delaware. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be here.
Well, as we're talking here, it is mid-October. You guys were able to get a season in the spring. Looks like you played about 36 games despite the pandemic. Pretty close to a regular season for you. Did you have to cut things down?
Yeah, we only played 34, which is not the typical 56 that you play. So that's 22 less games. That was a university decision. So and it was a rough season overall, not playing the full schedule, and then also having some bumps in the road with some guys physically, especially arms that were out. So. Yeah, last year was a tough one.
Is the hope at this point, and obviously it's always a fluid situation, but as normal as we're kind of used to in the spring, if everything goes well?
Yeah, we're back to normal. We've got our full 56 games slated for the spring, and our first two trips down south. We open up at Stetson, and then the following weekend we're over down in Florida Atlantic, down there in Boca Raton. So we got two great trips ahead of us.
So let's talk about your life in baseball. You're a Delaware native. Were you baseball all the time as a kid? Or were you whatever was going on in the neighborhood or whatever was in season?
Yeah, I did it all. I played obviously football, basketball, baseball. I actually wrestled. So I was playing all the sports. Jumping from season to season as a kid, and did that all the way up through high school.
When does baseball start to rise to the top for you?
It was happening in my days of high school. I was also a pretty good football player and got some opportunities being recruited for football. But, baseball was starting to come to the forefront. And I kind of knew that was my avenue. By the time I got into my junior year, I knew that that was future baseball.
You end up going to the University of Delaware. Was it a slam dunk to go there, or were there other schools in the mix at that point?
Well, you know, as like most young kids, you always have this dream of going far away, west or south. But I'm from a fairly big family, and my parents came to watch me play, and Delaware was kind of a lot easier for our family, and also financially too. But I also got recruited to do both at Delaware, to play football and baseball. And then eventually I just chose the path to play baseball.
Was it a tough decision, or were you just kind of looking at the cards on the table and this makes the most sense?
Yeah, it was tough. I remember telling Coach Tubby Raymond, the Hall of Famer football coach here at the university, that I was deciding to play just football. And he blasted me pretty good, you know. And obviously they had put some time in recruiting me. But I just knew that was my avenue if I was going to have a further future after college, and that would have been professional baseball. I would sit up in the stands watching the football game, squirming and twisting and turning, and at times wishing I was out there. But, in the long run, I know I made the right choice.
What position did you play in football?
I was a quarterback in high school and a strong safety. I had gotten recruited here as a strong safety. And then later, Tubby had asked me to potentially switch over and to play quarterback when I came into the university. And then that's kind of made my decision to stay with baseball, only because as a skill position, you know, quarterback, running back, you're going to have to be out there for spring practice, and that's in the heart of baseball season. So I decided to just stay with baseball.
What position were you in? You were an infielder, weren't you? Baseball?
Well, I was an outfielder in all through high school and college baseball, and as I got drafted, that's what I was. I was a very typical right fielder type, pretty big guy at that time, 6'2", 205, 210, had a real strong arm. And so that's what I did my first year with the Astros. My first spring training with the Astros, they came to me and said, "Hey, listen, we think you're a pretty good athlete, and we'd like to make you a third baseman. And we think that would be your fastest avenue to the big leagues." And because at that time, the Astros really didn't have much power in their organization. And they just thought that would be a faster way for me to get to the big leagues. So I did it. And I didn't do it exactly very well playing third base. My whole life was more or less an outfielder. I've done some other, I caught a little bit, but it was a big change. And it was a decision on my career path, and maybe big leagues faster.
I'll talk more about that in a second. When you're at Delaware, and you mentioned, you choose baseball, you think you've got the longest, the chance for, to go with it the longest. Was there a point when you really started to realize that professional baseball wasn't just like a dream or a hope, but this is going to happen. There's a really good chance this is going to happen, and I need to start looking at it through those frames that, I'm going to have decisions to make and, kind of looking long term. Do you remember the moment when it started to crystallize?
Yeah. I came off a real good freshman year. We really had a really good team in 79 here at Delaware. We went to the regionals and made it to the final game in that regional, which was hosted by Florida State. We knocked off Florida State. We knocked off Florida. We lost to eventual Arkansas, who went on to the World Series and finished second that year in the World Series. I then, sophomore year, still decent sophomore year, played up in Cape Cod that summer after my sophomore year. That's when it really clicked that I could play beyond college and play professional. And, hopefully make it to the show, as everybody calls the big leagues when you're playing baseball. And I had a really good summer up in Cape Cod against, you know, the best talent basically across the country. So there was, it was, you know, lights came on that, hey, listen, I think I can really do this thing. And so the, you know, I had gotten drafted in my, went back to Delaware junior year, got drafted by the Cubs, but didn't sign, came back to school, went back up Cape Cod my junior year, had another real good summer up there, and then got drafted by the Astros in my senior year.
Tough decision not to sign with the Cubs, or was it, yeah, did it just make more sense?
I didn't go to the 20th round. You know, in those days, I had lots of rounds. I had about 55 rounds. But, you know, as a young kid, your heart's saying, you know, your goal is to go play professional baseball. But my heart and emotions were still tied in with the university. And I really felt that I needed to complete the task, as you want to call it, and play my senior year and play with the guys I've been playing with. And we had a good incoming freshman class. I wanted to be captain of that team. We went on to the regionals that year. And then another major part was Coach Anna, my coach, best guy I've ever dealt with on a baseball field in my whole career, as class act, as a guy that you want to be around in the game of baseball. So that played into it as well. I wanted to play another year with Coach Anna. I knew I'd get another opportunity to be drafted. Let's put to sum it up. Where some guys feel, if I don't sign now, I don't get another chance. I knew I'd get another chance.
So when you do get that next chance in the Astros, did you know anything about the Astros organization? Were you surprised, or had they kind of been in contact and you thought, yeah, there's a good chance this is how it's going to go?
Well, of course, I knew who the Astros were. I mean, you know, I've been following Major League Baseball. They had an old-time scout named Cleary Anderson. He had been watching me up Cape Cod. He was from over in Jersey, but he saw me, you know, play those summers up in Cape Cod when he was up there. So I knew they were interested. So when it happened, I was like, you know, of course I was a homegrown Phillies fan. And, you know, that would have been, you know, icing on a cake if you're drafted by the Phillies. But it really didn't matter. I just wanted to go play and have that opportunity.
What's the transition to pro ball like once you sign and get into the organization? Does it feel at first like, wow, this is really a step up? Or were you pretty comfortable that, you know, maybe a little bigger, faster, stronger, but, you know, I feel like I belong?
Yeah, I think the biggest adjustment for almost any young guy is just being able to handle being on your own. You know, I mean, I was older, I was 22, and but, you know, for those young guys that may be in, you know, 18, 19, going out on their first time, it's a major adjustment. So for me, I think I was well adjusted. So I could handle that part of just being away from home, the grind of playing every single day. I was well adjusted. So I was okay with that. Where for a lot of guys, it kind of destroys them. They just can't rally, and it's they're overwhelmed. And then I knew offensively I belonged. I knew that I was going to be able to, you know, hit enough to make my way as a professional baseball player. So, you know, I had a certain inner confidence, but I don't think I was too cocky. You know, but I just felt that, you know, I had the right talent and the right tools to play professional baseball and make it to the big leagues.
You mentioned earlier the position change where they put you to third base. That's difficult, you know, especially when you've been a right fielder for so long and there's so much to third base. Was it hard to not let the adjustment to the field carry over to the plate? Were you able to separate the two?
At times I didn't. You know, I kid around with some of our own players here at the university talking about, you know, making the change position. And I told them I looked like a monkey wrestling around with a football over there. I got, you know, I was a pretty good athlete, but I got better. I had more throwing issues than anything because I was a long arm, you know, throwing outfielder. And then you had your double play pivots, short arm, you know, thrown to second. Charge plays, So I struggled with those type of throws. And, mentally it worked on you a little bit, which kind of carries into a little bit what you were doing offensively, where in all the other years of playing the outfield, I knew if I struggled at the plate, I was a really good defender in the outfield, and I could throw real well as well. So I knew I could do the other, and if I wasn't going well offensively. If I wasn't going well offensively playing third, I knew I still was going to struggle playing third defensively. So it played on me a little bit. And it was a learning experience.
Is there a point during your minor league career? Because looking at the numbers, it looks like for a lot of years you played outfield and third and moved around. Is there a discussion where you say, I'm more comfortable in the outfield, it might be better for everyone? I mean, that's easy to say from the outside, not when you're a young player in a professional organization. But does the thought come up? Are there any of those conversations?
Yeah. I mean, I talked with the brass, as we would call it, the upper management, our minor league director and our assistant GM would come in. It was ironic because in the spring of 85, we had that discussion about going back to the outfield, and they said, just keep cracking at it one more year, and then if it doesn't work out, maybe you can go back to the outfield. And I had one of my better years, and I made the Double-A All-Star team that year. So part of me was going, they're going to really want to keep me now at third. We kind of, the following year when I broke for Big League and for Triple-A, we were going to go back to the outfield, and I was playing, and then I had gotten hurt, two different separate injuries that kind of derailed my career. From that point. So, but no, we did have those discussions about, going back to the outfield.
And those injuries, because you mentioned you have that great season, I think it was with Columbus in Double-A. And then after that, it's only a handful of games in Triple-A. And then I think you played a year out in Boise in independent ball. Were they injuries that you, at the time, you realized that this is really serious, or was it just kind of something that you were never able to get right?
Yeah, I don't know where on that stat thing that Boise came up. It's one of those. I never played in Boise, so.
Oh, okay.
I know. And I've seen it on my own stat line. I'm like, Boise, 87. I was coaching Wilmington University in 87. So I don't know, unless there's another Jim Sherman they crossed up with. I had a late knee, kind of a surgery going into spring, before spring training, got to spring training 86. It wasn't 100%. Went to Tucson, Triple-A, could probably only play about every third day before my knee would start to swell again. We're in Honolulu. That was the Pirates, Triple-A back then, was in Honolulu. Not a bad place to play. I'm in the outfield in this game. I dove for a ball, and I broke my thumb on a ball in Aloha Stadium with that old turf. Remember, they used to play the old all-pro years ago. And then that derailed me. So I had the knee issue. I had the thumb issue. And then it was just I just never could get back on track physically. And then they came to me and said, let's go down and see if you can, get back in shape, because I was on the DL for a while. And let's go down to down to Daytona, which is our Florida State League game, team, and see if you can rehab. And I was like, I don't feel like riding the buses again. Once you get Triple-A, you're flying, and you feel you're this close. So I said I need a little bit of time to sit down and talk about my future and take a few days off. And that's when I decide to call it a career.
How hard is that?
Well, it was ironic because I came back home from Tucson, spent a little time to think about it. I came back here in Delaware, and I sat down with my father and talked about it. And then I ran into the athletic director at, it was Wilmington College at that time. It's Wilmington University now. A guy by the name of John Bednash. And he said, what are you doing? I thought you were playing. And I told him, I said, well, I'm hurt. I'm on a DL and they want me to go rehab. And I don't know if I'll play anymore. I might call it a career. He said, do you have any interest in coaching? Because we got an opening at Wilmington. And I said, college baseball, I might. He said, Jeff Taylor, who played here at the university before me with his twin brother, Steve Taylor, who was a number one pick of the Yankees, Steve was. Jeff had stepped down as the coach at Wilmington to become a New York Yankee scout. So he planted that seed. I left. I went back. I had to think about it. And then I just said, you know what? I think I'll do this. And the rest is history. I'm still in college baseball. You know, I thought I'd be back in professional baseball in some capacity over the years. And I had some opportunities over the years, but I thought maybe I'll do a run in college and then get into professional baseball into coaching. And of course, you get married, you have kids, and a lot of things change. So I just stayed on the home front.
Once you close the book on playing, are there ever moments of regret, you know, the next couple of years when you're still young enough, you know, where if you wanted to go back, you know what, I got connections, I could probably still give it a try, I'm feeling better? Or once you were done, you were good and you were happy with the coaching and that, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, ironically, for two straight years, the Astros sent me a contract. So it didn't fully release me. I was still under contract with the Astros in the sense of, you know, their property. I was tempted to go back in 87. I was thinking about it after the 87 season. And then I just, you know, I had just got married and had a child on the way. And I just, you know, I had to make that call. And so I don't have regrets that, you know, I got married or I had a kid. I just, your only regret is really not making it to the big leagues and having that opportunity to have that unbelievable moment of being a big league baseball player.
When you think back to your playing career in the minors, you know, and at Delaware, what are the best memories you have? Like, if you think about your career as a player, what are the one or two things that pop right to the top?
Well, one, playing for Coach Hanna, classiest guy I've ever dealt with as a baseball player. I even coached with him. So that memory comes right to the top. The regional teams that we had at Delaware, we were in the rankings, in the top 25 rankings, 3 of the 4 years back then. People don't realize that. Beating Florida and Florida State in the regionals in my freshman year, the minor league experience is, you know, everything that I thought it was going to be. You know, it's a struggle. It's a grind. People don't realize how underpaid those guys are. And, you know, we're hearing about those issues as we speak. You know, that's an ongoing fight. I made $600 a month, my first professional contract. And, you got to pay your rent, you know, you got to eat, you know, gas money. It's just to make it. So you got to have some resources, either parents helping you out or some money saved up from some, you know, jobs during the winter. So, but the enjoyment of minor league ball was just the whole deal with trying to just keep making your way up the rung of the ladder. And then, you know, making the All-Stars team in Double A was fun. And then all the relationships that you had in college and professional baseball. We just had our golf outing, alumni golf outing here at the university. And tons of guys from those times that I played in the 70s and early 80s all come back. And all have come back over the years and all have given back. You know, those are the most important things, are the relationships.
Is there a place, and not necessarily a home team you played for, but one of the cool things about the minors is how there's just teams everywhere and you go places that you would never go, you know, under normal circumstances. is there one or two towns, stadiums that just stand out for whatever reason, just from a life experience standpoint that you think back to?
Well, Tucson and AAA was cool. I mean, you talk about a true cowboy town, you know, when guys just walking around, you know, the streets are going into a store. They're all, you know, they carry six shooters on the side of them, you know, out there. So those dynamics were eye-opening to me. Playing in Nashville, the Nashville Sounds were a double A at that time, and their scoreboard was a big guitar. That was kind of cool. You know, I was all, Honolulu was fun, you know, so I had a chance to go to Hawaii. You know, I've been all over, you know, you've been to Vancouver, you know, Calgary, you know, a lot of different places in the PCL league. So I went to places I never would have dreamed of going if I was never in, you know, minor league baseball. So it was, I played in Columbus, Georgia, which was not so, we played in Golden Park. It was a really run down ballpark, which, you know, in today's, you know, baseball yards, they're just magnificent. And that was just an old ballpark, and we didn't get very good crowds. The only crowds we would get was, that's where Fort Benning is, in Columbus, Georgia. And they'd bring all those military guys, march them in, you know, maybe 5,000 of those guys, and they'd pack the stadium. And they let those guys run to the concession stands for about five innings, and they get as drunk as they could over five innings, and they start their cat calls and getting all crazy. So that was a great experience there.
Time for a break on One-on-One, and we will have more with Delaware baseball coach Jim Sherman right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
And we are back. Our guest this week on One-on-One, Jim Sherman, head baseball coach at the University of Delaware. So you take over coaching at Wilmington, and I think NAIA at that point, they're D2 now, but right?
Yeah, exactly. NAIA, and it was really good baseball in different areas across the country. Lewis and Clark is still one of the premier programs out there in Idaho. And we met up, you know, they were in the World Series the two years I was out in the World Series. But that was the start of my coaching career.
How do you feel at first? You had success. I think you won like 2/3 of your games that first year and won the District 19 championship. But what do you have to learn? What comes natural? What was something you had to deal with on a regular basis that when you agree to be a coach, you're like, wow, I never thought about that's going to be part of the job.
Yeah, I think I kind of rolled into that role of head coach more like a player coach, if that's kind of understandable. We had an older team. We had some guys like Michael Haight and Scotty Rowe and Dave Van Horn, all seniors, all well-versed college baseball players. So they were a big help. And we were pretty good, actually. And, we just built upon it. And the good thing about NAIA, you had different kind of rules. You didn't have the continuous years. You had 5 years to play four. You could play 2 years and then take off 4 years and then come back to play. They did everything off of semesters. So I was getting guys bouncing back who walked away from playing or flunked out, had some academic issues. We were able to get them back on track. I recruited a kid named Billy Cannon. I saw him at Delaware semi-pro ball game here in Delaware. He was, 26 years old. I talked to him later on. He was bartending. I went in his place to have a beer. He was bartending and talked about his experience of playing. He said he played at Westchester for a year, blah, 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 didn't work out. And I said, well, do you ever think about coming back playing? He goes, I can't do that. I'm too old. I said, nah, not here at Wilmington NAIA. And I said, I got some scholarship money. I can help you out. And Billy came to Wilmington and ended up being one of our better pitchers. So those were the fun things. And the older players, gave me a lot of help along the way. And then, you got to start to build your staff a little bit. And I had some great coaches help out. And we played at our local American Legion Field stall posts, which recently Wilmington purchased now. It's their land and their facility. And then university, the college at that time was really good to me personally. And then I became the athletic director. So I was a baseball coach and athletic director all the way up through 94. And we went to the NAIA World Series in 92 and then 94. And we had some really good, teams.
How was the juggling act of being the athletic director in addition to being the coach? Cause I, in covering and doing games and stuff, I work with a lot of people who at a Division II or Division III or NAIA level are doing both. And it's funny, you go into their office 10 minutes before tip-off and you have this hallowed thought of what pregame is like before a big game. And they're on the phone talking about, the commercial washer just broke and can you get here by, 8 a.m. tomorrow to fix it because volleyball has to go on the road. Like, was that overwhelming at any point, just keeping those balls in the air, but also trying to be focused on your group and what your squad's trying to do?
Well, I had to, learn on the job. I was not necessarily prepared from an administrative standpoint, but eventually, I learned on the job. Now, we only had five teams at that time. I had some really good coaches in all those teams. So they were a big help. I was a one-man show initially. I just had myself. And eventually, I did hire a young girl as a secretary. And then I didn't really need as much as a secretary as much as I needed an assistant AD. And then I was able to hire an assistant AD to give me some help in that area. He was our volleyball coach. Craig Wolf. So that kind of worked out well. All the sports, you know, were competitive. We had both baseball and baseball and softball. We had basketball, men and women, and we had volleyball. One of the years, we all went to the national championships in NAIA. So that I was kind of proud of that. You know, we just kind of continued to build the athletic program, and we had great leadership by our president, Audrey Doberstein, and Jack Barcelona, who has recently stepped down in the last few years. And then we had another individual, Dr. Harmon. She came on, Laverne Harmon. She came on board somewhere kind of right towards the tail end of before I was leaving. So I was lucky. I was surrounded with really good people, and I just lived and learned on the job. Probably made my mistake, as I would look back now at some of the decisions or whatever you would do. I said, I might have done that a little different, but I think it went well, and I really enjoyed that experience.
So I think in 95, you come to Delaware as associate baseball coach. I mean, obviously it's your alma mater, so you've got connections and all, but how does it come together?
Coach Hanna and I had been talking since 92 about eventually maybe coming down as his assistant. He had the vision of me taking over the program. So when it came together, we agreed that the fall of 94 was going to be the time that I was making the transition from Wilmington to Delaware. Roy Carpenter actually played a major part of that, who just recently passed away, Roy, former owner of the Phillies. And we started in 94, and it was a great match. Coach Hanna was a very good pitching guy. I was a hitting guy. And we had a lot of regional runs during that time frame. He only wanted to coach three more years. I talked him into coaching three more years after that. It didn't matter to me whether I was assistant coach or the head coach. He was closing in on 1,000 wins in his career. There's only so many coaches in Division I baseball that have won 1,000 games at their institution. He ended up being one of the 20 guys in Division I baseball to do that. So that was something that we took pride in and wanting him to accomplish. And he did that. And he coached three more years. And then I took over, after the 2000 season.
You mentioned he was a pitching guy. You were a hitting guy. I've seen a couple different places people talk about how good of a hitting instructor you are. And it's interesting to me because a lot of times when players are really good hitters, or really good pitchers, they struggle to coach that simply because it's hard to get over the hump of, why can't you just do that? That should be simple. But it's simple for you. It's not simple for everyone. Did you encounter any of that, or did it always just come natural, the explaining kind of how to be a good hitter to other people?
Yeah, that's a good question, really, man. I mean, I think I stumbled like anybody else who had their share of success trying to translate some of your own thinking. Probably guys who played for me could speak better about it than I can. But I think I learned and along the way how to be a better hitting instructor. I'm not a big mechanics guy as much as I am an approach guy. I think that's one of the things guys would tell you about me. I think the mechanics start to get lost and jumble the mind a little bit too much. And there's so much that goes into it where I think if you're sound on a basic mechanic, but your approach is what leads you to the finish line, I think that was my approach, and I think a lot of guys followed that. And I had my share of guys that were pretty successful with it. So it's a learning process. There's times now as an older hitting guy, kids are coming from all these different academies, you know, summertime and at nighttime, and they use all the bells and whistles, you know, the hit tracks and all the information that's fed to them, all the analytics. I just feel they're overloaded and swing angles, everything. And I try to just kind of be real refreshing and try to be, you know, less informational for mechanics and more just from an approach type of hitting. So some may say a little bit old school, but I do believe it still works.
So you take over as head coach at 2000-2001. You're taking over at your alma mater, and you're replacing a legend. Mm-hmm. Pressure? Like, anytime you become a head coach in Division I specifically, there is a certain amount of pressure that goes with the job. But it would seem to me you've got a couple extra layers on top because of circumstance. Did you feel that at the time, or not really?
Well, of course, anybody would feel that pressure, replacing somebody of that stature, of Coach Hanna. Pressure and probably pride both are kind of connected there. Pride to be taken over from my alma mater. Pressure was, you know, to continue the dominance that we were having in the America East, which we did. We the following year, we won it, went to the regionals, went out to Ohio State. The next pressure part was the conference change. We made the conference change to the CAA back in 2002 in a much higher level conference baseball. And I was all for it and loved it. But we just quite weren't real prepared. We didn't have a full-time pitching coach. We didn't have that for many years after that. But that was more pressure making the conference change than anything.
Is there a moment as your coach at Delaware, and you mentioned that great first year, but that you felt like, you know, you've arrived? Like, was it right away that first season when you guys had that type of success? Just kind of a moment where you exhaled and said, you know, I'm feeling good about this.
Well, we had a good club, and we always, I thought, were in the right conference to win. We were the more southern team in that conference. So we would play that off in our recruiting if we were matching up against other schools in our conference. We're more the southern conference, better weather, that kind of stuff. But it was short-lived because we made this decision to go to the CAA. I think if we would have stayed in the America East over the next 10 years, we probably would have went to six more regionals. And no knock on America East, and no knock on our time in the America East, just the level of play competitively was much, much greater in the CAA. And we had really good runs in those earlier years in the CAA. We made the conference championship. We just could never get over the hump. We would lose in the conference championship like three years, different years throughout that cycle until we broke through back in 2017.
You mentioned that was my next question. 2017, you guys do win the title. You get the, you get into NCAA regionals. It's obviously exciting. How satisfying is it to get back and to do it in the CAA and such?
Yeah, well, it was a long run. It's kind of, you know, monkey off your back. And, you know, I know people probably would criticize why hadn't they been back to the regionals. And well understood. I get it. I was frustrated. But the combination of, you know, pitching was always critical during all those years, all those, you know, conference championships where we just couldn't get over the hump because we just never had enough pitching. We always had the offense, but and finally when we got there in 2017, we had both combination offense and pitching, and we just hit the hell out of the ball in that conference playoffs as well. And we got great pitching, and so that combination finally came through for us. It just had never been a real consistent formula throughout my career here at Delaware coaching.
How have you changed as a coach over the years, style-wise or focus-wise?
Well, my longtime assistant, Dan Hammer, has been with me 26 years. He would tell you, be the first to tell you, I'm really mild. I've really calmed down. And I think that goes hand in hand with age. Can't be running around. But then again, you watch Pete Carroll with the Seattle Seahawks. He runs around like a 28-year-old coach. I think how you approach young guys and some of their struggles and the dynamics of coaching young kids today is much different than it was 20 years ago. So you've had to change along the way with that. And I think that I've done that. I think there's teaching methods that some things I don't necessarily agree with, but they're out there. And that's where a lot of these kids are being honed in on. And so you got to kind of feed them some of that information because that's what they have learned through their high school or travel ball team. So so I've changed in that way a little bit. I'm still, you know, what I would refer to as a little old school on some of the methods and approaches that I do. And I always say old school isn't necessarily a wrong way. It can still be just as successful. So I think just being a little bit more mellow in your approach with young guys is one of the biggest things. And then knowing how to communicate even greater now that I'm older, you know, where, you know, at one time I was real young and then another time I could be more like a father figure and now more like a grandfather figure. I enjoyed, you know, each segment of my career. I'm probably enjoying this segment the most, just because it's a closeness to players, more about just being a young man and not as much as pushing them to be, you know, this unbelievable baseball player, but just trying to be a better, well-rounded individual. They end up being a good baseball player, great. And if they become just an average, that's okay. So I think that relationship has changed. I was always more about them just being a great player, a real good player. And now with age, I have come full circle and really, really have a better understanding of, you know, their future and my role of why I'm here and all that kind of stuff. So that's probably the biggest change.
You've had a lot of players go on to play pro baseball at one level or another. You've had guys get to the big leagues. What's the pride to have a kid that came through your program be able to reach the biggest stage and have success?
Yeah, well, you know, we had Kevin Mensch, who was, I mean, he was unbelievable the 3 years that he's been here. And, you know, he had 33 home runs his sophomore year, 33 in a college season, you know, unbelievable. Made it up in the big leagues, played with the Texas Rangers, played with the Milwaukee Brewers. He was a whole cut above the average kid that we would ever have here. We have Chad Kuhl, who's been with the Pittsburgh Pirates, been in their rotation. They've been using him out of the pen lately. I still stay in contact with both those individuals. They mean a lot to Delaware baseball. We've had other ones over the years. We've had, you know, ton of minor league guys. So it gives you a lot of pride, and it gives a shooting point for young incoming guys to understand you can be a big leaguer coming into Delaware just as easy as you can going to, you know, a Power Five school. It's possible. You can get there. So if that's your dream, that's your end goal, you can make it. So we've proven that out. I think we're going to have more future big leaguers here in the near future.
And you talked about when you were talking about, you know, how you've changed as a coach, kind of connecting with the players. When you talk about the entire experience of what you do as a coach, what is your favorite part? You know, is it relationships? Is it game day? Is it the bus ride after a big win? Like, if you had to kind of put a depth chart, what would be at the top? Maybe your top one or two things that really keep you going in this job.
Well, for me, game day is probably the biggest part because I love the managing part of games. the strategic part of it. And I'm still out of third base coaching box, so not moving around as fast, you know, but I'm out there and I like that part. Making the decision, you know, whether to bring a kid first or third or sending a kid at home on a ball in a gap. What are the strategic things that happen during a game? That's the fun part of coaching. Right underneath that is the relationships. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, our alumni outing that we have every year where we have 110, 120 guys out there and seeing some old faces, seeing some, you know, fairly fresh faces out of the program. I continue to interact with a lot of the players from my playing days, from my coaching days. Still kid around with many of them, text them. You know, I got a saying, shake the sheets. That means get the hell out of bed. Let's get rolling. So they get that text, or our players, current players, get those texts all the time. So I enjoy that part of interaction with the guys, and it's something I'll truly miss when I'm out of this business, is that real interconnection, you know, with the current players. I'll always have it, you know, with former players, but once you walk off the field, you're not coaching it anymore. So that part I'll definitely miss.
Jim Sherman, this was fun. Thanks so much for the time.
Matty, I appreciate it, and Delaware Baseball appreciates it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Delaware head baseball coach Jim Sherman for being our guest this week. If you like the show, you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.